What is going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined by comic creator David M. Boer. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited. If you all don't know David, you've been living under a rock as comic fans, because David, you wrote one of the people's most beloved comics of Kanto with IDW. Yes, right there.
And there he is.
And tell me the wonderful Wizard of Oz book is right behind you there too, right?
Oh my gosh, I talk about this. You can't stop me from talking about this. Listen,
I'm not going to have you on a videos chat and not mention, where you can at least point out that book.
I do podcasts and I'm like, these are not props, people. This is where I work. And I just keep pointing at stuff like Firefly.
I also love the Firefly. What is the Firefly behind you?
What is it?
Yeah.
This one is a big compendium that was done, I forget who exactly, which publisher, but it was like a big collection. Might have been what the Dark Horse did before it went over to Boom. This is a little Joey Spioto, his business card's back here. But this is something I picked up at a con a while back. And if you look really closely, it's got the little golden book.
Oh my cover, goodness. Yes.
And it's tiny little shiny little fireflies. And it's like them as a little kid's book. And oh, I just had to have that. It's just a little
poster. Yes. As a Firefly fan, you have to have that.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
It's so good. Well, I had to mention the Wizard of Oz book because I know you talk about it a lot. And I know you were on an interview with I'm on a show with some people who interviewed you before. So Will the Beast from Hero and the Kid and Comics Will Break Your Heart, Jennifer, they interviewed you and it was a great interview. And they mentioned that book. And one of the things that you talked about when you were talking about the book, you were like that you bought it when it was at from a library. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I grew up in a kind of smallish town right on Lake Erie in Ohio, situated right between Cleveland and Erie, Pennsylvania. And I was such a huge library fanatic. I just absolutely loved the public library. So I spent all my time there. And probably when I was 12 or 13, I was really into like old books and they had a used book sale. And I think this book was on the shelf for the longest time and they put it in the sale. And now at the, I don't think I can pull it out right now, but on the bottom, it's still stamped with the name of the library where I grew up. So I bought it when I was 12. That's 30 years ago now. And I still have it. It's one of my possessions that has made it all this way.
That's so good. And I had to bring that up because being an Ohio kid myself, you know.
Oh, what part?
I'm based in Columbus here now. So I'm in the heart of it all.
Excellent. Yeah. And you know, I go back frequently and I love to revisit all those places that meant so much to me when I was growing up.
We just took our family up to camp on the lake this summer. So.
Oh, fantastic.
But enough about Ohio. Let's talk about comics, because that's what people are watching the show. They want to, I mean, maybe people watch my show and they want to talk about Ohio, but how did you get into, have you always liked comics, or was this kind of later on in life? How did you get involved with comics, like as just a fan?
Yeah. So, you know, I talk about this a lot and I used to say that I came late to comics, but I think that's wrong. I don't think that you're ever late coming to comics. You might be an adult when you discover them, but that's, everybody has their own, you know, has their own journey. And mine, when I was a kid, I really was into Mad Magazine, Far Side, the Sunday Funnies. I used to read the newspaper. We used to have Silly Putty that I don't know. I mean,
this, and then you had it on the Silly Putty. Yes.
That dates me, but hey kids. I did too. Hey kids. There was Silly Putty, and if you pressed it onto newsprint, in the comics, the newsprint would transfer, and you could put your comic onto Silly Putty, basically like a type of Play-Doh.
It would ruin your newspaper, but it was great.
That's what newspapers are for, right? Read and enjoy. You know, an old newsprint comics, I'm just thinking about that now. It probably could work on those too. But, you know, I would not recommend, if you have that action number one, putting Silly Putty in the middle of those pages. So Mad Magazine, Far Side, Sunday Funnies, that's what I grew up with. I didn't really read comic books when I was young, and I probably came about 15 years ago now. I started going to San Diego Comic-Con when I moved to LA, and just for kind of film, TV, pop culture stuff, I was into a lot of it, but not really comics. And the kind of, if you've ever been to San Diego Comic-Con, you know, it kind of sucks you in.
Yeah.
And I picked up my first really introduction to comics as a modern storytelling device was Lock and Key by Joe Hill and Gabe Rodriguez. And it's still my favorite comic of all time.
Nice.
But it showed me not only not only that you could tell that kind of story in the comic right. medium, but that a story like that could be told. And I just fell in love with it. And I realized, I kind of want to do this. I want to try my hand at this. And so I circled back to a lot of the classics like Watchmen and some of the other books that, I've read. Fun Home is right above me over here. Mouse Guard. All these, just trying to circle back and kind of complete my education, if you, as it were. So I did all that. And probably about 5 or 6 years ago now, I pitched my first book to the company that became Vault Comics, and they picked it up. And so I had that. It was a very slow burn till Canto came out in 2019, and that kind of accelerated things a little bit.
Yeah.
The readers responded. We love Canto. Drew and I, my co-creator Drew Zucker and I, just adore Canto as a character in the book and everything. And we were thrilled that, in 2019 when it came out, that a lot of other people were feeling the same way we did. Yes. So.
Well, and that's so exciting. And since you mentioned Canto, let's talk about briefly, because I got to talk about briefly, but I want to get to Killer Queens here in just a second. But Canto, what about it then, like that story? Obviously, you got the Wizard of Oz. You've got, if you look at, all these different kind of influences. Yep. That are putting into this idea. Why do you think it resonated so well with so many people? Because I mean, I was late to the Canto train myself, but as you said, you can't be late.
This interview is over.
I was late to it, but no, it was because so many of my friends were all about Canto. They were singing its praises that I was like, what is this book about? And I read it and I was like, okay, I get it.
You read it and you're like, I still don't get it. I'm just teasing. I think when it came along, we always wanted to tell a story that was about hope and courage. There were a couple ingredients we specifically included in there that I think did what we wanted them to do. One is I wanted to create a quest for Canto that he's going out and he's helping somebody else, not himself, because I think the story would be very different if he was out trying to get his own heart. Right. But since he's doing it very selflessly, I think people really liked that. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's small in his world, I call it the Baby Yoda effect, because when I watched Mandalorian, every time Grogu was on the screen, I just thought to myself, it's so brilliant because if anything happened to that little character, I would flip a table. I would get so mad. So I think we channeled a little bit of that where it's a tiny character in a great big world. I think it all mixed together, and Drew's art is unbelievable, especially how he was able to create Canto's eyes to convey emotion when the rest of his face is completely covered. So all we have are his body language and his eyes. And so Drew really nailed that. And we made Canto, a big reason why Canto exists is because Drew and I did not see anything on the shelf that looked like it. Mm. I love I talk about all the time. I love Dark Crystal, Neverending Story, Secret of Nim. Drew's, you know, 90s influences are Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movies. And it just feels like there's a gap. There was a gap in the market for those kind of books.
Yeah.
All ages, fantasy, fairy tale that speaks to adults as well as kids. So we just made the book we wanted to read. And it turns out other people wanted to read it too. So, you know, we're absolutely floored by the success, and we love all the readers and the fans. We love interacting with them on social media and everything.
Yeah.
You know, and this book came from a place of us wanting to make it because we wanted to read it.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of where he sprang from.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense when it sounds such a passion for you. Like you said, it's something that you want, you create, like you're going to enjoy it. And hopefully then other people do. And it feels naturally that they do. When you got into the realm of creating Kanto, did you imagine, like, did you just vision the story, or did you kind of have like this whole huge story out there planned out that you're like, if they let me tell it, if people latch onto it, like you had it in the back of your head?
Yeah, so we always had the first story arc,
right?
And we hoped it would continue on, but you never know. So right. We had that first story arc, and we were going to be satisfied with where it ended up. And I mean, you've read it, so you know it kind of there's a catharsis there.
Right.
We know that there's still the threat out there, but if we had to leave Kanto to his own devices, then we would have done that, right? But we also had a larger story in mind, and we always knew where it was going to end up. We originally, we anticipated three story arcs. So it was originally going to be, If I Only Had a Heart, Hollow Men, and Lionhearted. And we were able, in the sales success of Kanto, the original, we were able to break it out into four. So now we have Lionhearted, and the fourth one is A Place Like Home. And we've got an opportunity to expand the story a little bit beyond the boundaries of even what we had anticipated. But we always had a starting point, which was Kanto and Arcana with his people.
Yep.
And we always had an end point, which is, I'm not going to tell you.
I was like, maybe he's just going to fall for it.
So close. No, we always knew how the story is going to end, and I have a very clear vision in my head. We're still wrapping up Lionhearted, which is currently, it's coming out now, issue three. Mm-hmm. As of this recording, today, issue three of Lionhearted is out on shelves. And, you know, as we get closer and closer, it's, you know, crystallizing where all of this is going to end. And Drew and I are the biggest Kanto fans out there, and I think we both are going to would feel very satisfied with this ending.
Right.
So I hope the readers do too.
Yeah.
It's like just tugging on those heartstrings and, you know, just making it worthwhile.
That's so great. Well, I'm going to shift the conversation because I feel like you've gotten to talk about Kanto a lot on interviews, and Killer Queens is a little bit new, fresher. So I think it's time we get into some Killer Queens.
Killer Queens. It's just slightly different from the Kanto.
Just a little bit different.
You know, people talk about branding and stuff, yeah. And I'm just like, just tell the stories you love.
Right. Because it's like you said, Kanto, it's goes this, and you're like, no, all right, here we go. With Killer Queen. So if someone's watching this podcast or YouTube video and they haven't been able to read issue one, because right now, currently, issue one is the only copy that's out. What is Killer Queens about? What's the story?
Well, we brought together an all LGBTQ creative team to create what I affectionately refer to as Guardians of the Galaxy. That's it. So Max and Alex are two, they're both gay. Former reformed intergalactic assassins for hire on the run from their former boss, who is a fluffy monkey in a jetpack. He brings on some hench otters to recover the ship that Max and Alex stole from him. Hijinks ensue. as they are sort of on the run, they Alex goes to her old flame to get a new job, which is a non-assassination kidnapping recovery from a nearby moon that is governed by a fascist dictatorship. Their meticulous plan goes exactly according to how they laid it out for about 4 seconds. They crash land on the planet. They're taken into custody. And what are the killer queens going to do? Read the comic and we'll find out.
Read the comic and find out. I remember seeing this. And as soon as I saw your name attached to it, I was like, I've got to explore this and check it out. Good golly, one of the funniest books I've read in a long time. I don't know if you like, I was cracking. I don't typically laugh out loud because I feel like humor is so hard to do in writing, but I was cracking up. There are a couple panels where I'm like, all right, David, you got me.
This was so, so I get asked occasionally, how is Kanto and Killer Queens? What's the connection there? Mm-hmm. And it's telling stories that you just love and want to tell. And in the back of Killer Queens, Dark Horse gave me this great opportunity to write a little essay about, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, right here. Yep. It's this column called Horsepower. And they gave me the opportunity to just tell why I wanted to tell the story. And it's 13-year-old David would have just flipped his lid to read this kind of book. It doesn't take itself too seriously. I just kind of let out all of the weight of like Kanto's storytelling, and it's a fable and you're just world building and all these things. And I just took a moment to lift that weight from my shoulders and tell a story about characters that just are fun and funny and just tongue in cheek. They don't take themselves too seriously. We're not taking the book too seriously. It's funny to read some commentary on it. People are like, wow, they just get really serious about the review. And I'm just like, lighten up, people. It's Dragon's Lair. It's Don Bluth. It's freaking Planet Comics through the lens of Guardians of the Galaxy. Don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun to sort of release that weight and just be funny and fun and just have such a good time with it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I feel like as comic reviewers and, on YouTube, like we always like, and even with movies and stuff, we're always like, well, it needs to be at this certain type of storytelling at all times, like it has to be this type of thing, and it's like sometimes you want to just sit back and laugh, like you don't need like you said the fable aspect, you want to just the inner like just unwind and have a blast and not take yourself too seriously.
Everybody, just like comics right now, if you're not all serious and gloom and doom, I'm like, people, these are funny books.
Yes.
These, for decades, kids would roll these up and put them in their back pocket. And somehow we have lost a little bit of touch with that, which is fine. I mean, there's lots of places for great, serious storytelling and horror and fantasy and just, sci-fi, all these big, weighty concepts. And that's what, Watchmen does. And there's plenty of room for that.
Yeah,
but there's also room to be funny and to have that expectation as a reviewer or reader is that you're always going to get one type of book. I think is a failure of the market, right? Not a failure of the reader or the reviewer. I don't begrudge reviewers who come to this and are like, yeah, there's not, it's just, it doesn't have a weight. It doesn't have the gravitas that I'm looking for. And I don't begrudge you for that because you've been conditioned to look for right. that.
Yeah.
So.
But
I guess bottom line is, Greg, it's fun.
It is. Gang, if you're watching this and you haven't read it, it is a fun read. I think it's like the fourth panel. It's right after the opening fight scene. You put a part in the storytelling where it's just right there, that page right there, where you have this whole dialogue of like,
do not,
so this is what we're doing now. We're literally just telling stuff that we know what's happening. Okay. And you do it in such a smart, witty way that you're telling people how we got to where we're at in the story by our two, by Alex and Max, by having this conversation. And I'm like, that's such a well done, rather than having this like narration of, you know, like, this is what happened or a flashback. You just tell it of like, oh, we're repeating things that we already know. Cool.
Telling each other stuff that we already know. Okay. Yeah, this is one page is backstory, world building, all that fun stuff. And of course there's stuff in there. You know, knock on wood, we get to tell, you know, another story with these killer queens. That's all stuff that we can mine and we can develop right. The characters and things. I am such a huge believer in not dumping exposition and world building right out of the gate. I don't need to know how many planets are in this system, how big the galaxy is, what the alien, you know, what the different competing religions and political philosophies right. are. I don't need to know any of that. Honestly, I just want to have a couple of characters that I want to follow whatever happens, wherever they go. And when we need to build the world out, we'll build it out. But until that point, just enjoy the ride. Same thing is exactly the same approach with Kanto. He starts out as a slave in a world where his people don't know what's out there. They don't know what the history is. They don't know their own history. They don't have any, they don't have names. They're not allowed to have relationships with each other. They literally know nothing about their world. And as a reader, when you start Kanto, you probably don't know anything about their world either. So we give it to you as Kanto goes along in his adventure. And I think that's the best way to world build is yeah. to build it when you need it, not when you think the reader wants it.
Yeah. I think it's great. Well, because you've created two characters, well, three, and we'll get to the third character we haven't mentioned too much yet, but you created characters of Alex and Max who, like you said, I want to follow their journey. I want to follow the hijinks that ensue. But then I believe you said it's Beady is the
Beady,
the furry flying monkey.
Don't call him Fluffy. And his hench otters. And people love those hench otters. There's Beady. He's got a little leisure suit on. And he's a fluffy monkey with a jetpack.
It's so good.
Well, I'm gonna say it here, and I've said it before. If you get the trade. Beady comes in here with hench otters, so henchmen, but they're otters.
Naturally,
of course. Here's one getting shot right there. So everybody has been responding to him. So I've actually written a 6-page short that's going in the trade exclusively. That's called Killer Queens Presents Harry the Hench Otter in It's Not Easy Being Mean. It's just hench otters talking about how hard it is when you're so cute to be a bad guy.
I love it because you even mentioned that in there, like, I don't want to shoot them.
They're so, well, I can't shoot them. They're adorable. Imagine if you're trying to be a really intimidating hench person, but you got an otter face. Come on. Like, it's got to be hard.
Well, and I will tell you, I lost it on the panel where Beady is talking
on the audio.
And he's like, you cut my audio, didn't you? And then you see the thumbs up, like, I love the thumbs up. And then Beady just flips him off, like, I hate you. Kind of just like, oh, you're so annoying.
He's so sick of these two. Sick of them. Wait until issue 4. So yeah, have a beautiful symmetry to poor Beady. I mean, you just feel bad for him.
You kind of do because you're like, oh, he's so cute and he's so nice. But he's
also the boss to hired assassin. So
right.
He's probably got some stuff in his past that he's probably not that proud of, but also he's cute and funny. So
Why, when you were telling this story, did you want to kind of, like, obviously we have human characters in Max and Alex, but like, where did the idea, like, to throw in like monkey, like Beady, and the otter henchman, like, blending these worlds rather than just like an alien or something, you know?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we're, first of all, we're just having fun with it.
Right.
And second of all, the Beedi is an actual species of monkey, and it's got a blue face with like bronze fur. And it's just so cool looking and so cute that we thought, why not put him in a leisure suit and give him a jetpack? And here we are. We've got anthropomorphic characters now. We've got alien characters. Who knows what else is out in the galaxy? Right. And we will hopefully have the opportunity to find out.
That's awesome. And you mentioned earlier in the show that the whole creative team is LGBTQ plus behind it. Was this kind of like, was that a goal intending? Like, hey, this is a story we want to tell as a collective? Or was it to kind of just kind of start to hand that, like, fit that way? And then you're like, well, let's make it go that way.
No, we actually set out specifically as a strategy to pull together an all LGBTQ creative team. You know, specifically to create the opportunities for representation, but also there's authenticity. Of course, you know, straight creators can write gay characters, and you know, that's not my mindset. Isn't that you're exclusively able to write characters that you can identify with fully? But there's also, I find when I'm writing it, I find that there are things that I bring to it from my personal experience growing up as a gay kid in the Midwest.
Right.
Emotions, psychological pieces of it that I can see coming out in my writing. I'm doing another project right now with you know, two LGBTQ main characters, and as I'm writing them, I think I just surprise myself sometimes how I pull out not specifically experiences, but my approach to situations, to interacting with people that have come, that I have developed because, you know, being part of the LGBTQ community for my life. And so I enjoy seeing that level of authenticity and representation in the book. And, you know, it's super gay book, so we're just like, let's just do it. We're in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's just go for it.
But it's, I think, you know, it is appropriate to have these stories out there that there's representation, because I've had a lot of friends that have reached out to me knowing that I get comics, and so like whenever that representation shows up in a comic book, they're like, have you heard about this comic? Is it good? And I'm like, it's allowing people to have that. So I think that's a great thing. And you're telling a hilarious story through the midst of it.
Well, and you know, that was my goal too, is it's not a coming out story. It's not a bullying story. It's not, you know, it's not about homophobia or any of the topics that you think in the forefront of LGBTQ issues. It's a sci-fi romp that just so happens to star two characters who happen to be gay. Right. So I set out for it to be broadly appealing, and particularly, you know, create a particular connection between LGBTQ readers and this story, seeing some representation there. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, some people, you know, push it into a niche of queer stories, you know, and that's fine. Everybody brings their own experience to it.
Right.
But I, you know, I always intended it to be just like what you said, just a funny, fun sci-fi adventure that just so happens to, you know, have a queer angle to it.
Right. And I like that idea. That I didn't even think about it as reading, but like there, you, like you said, it's just telling a fun story. You're not dealing with some of the other aspects that have come up in, you know, in conversations or in comic books that you would expect.
Issues.
And, yeah, with all the issues that are out there.
There's tons of stories that do that. Yep. And there are definitely a place for all those stories. I just did not, I wanted to create a funny sci-fi comic. And, you know, the fact that we've gotten to do it in this way with Dark Horse in particular, I think that's probably one of the biggest benefits that I didn't realize and starting to get feedback from people. Seeing queer readers respond to this story that has come from a high profile publisher like Dark Horse, I think it's been eye opening for me. And I think it's been eye opening for some readers that Dark Horse would take a chance on, a book like this.
Right.
And the messages that I've seen from readers who just are like 13-year-old David who loses mind over this book, that, you know, seeing other readers feel that way about it is really, it's very satisfying for me.
That's got to be a good, like when you, like you said, you intended to write it out of, in the article you said in the back of the book, of to write a book that 13-year-old David would love. And then you're getting some of those messages that you're like, okay, this is like a 13-year-old David saying like, I love this book. And like, that's gotta be like, yes, this is why I did what I did. And like, it's gotta feel good.
Yeah. You create that little bit of a connection with, mm-hmm. with the reader when those readers are saying, oh my God, I would have loved this when I was a teenager.
Yep.
It's like, there you go. That's all you need.
Well, David, I'm going to wrap this up and briefly, cause I want to respect your time, but I've got to ask. So you say, I know this is 4-issue arc, but you kind of said that if there's a possibility, you have more ideas for the story, if it takes off.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just encourage everybody to go out and grab a copy and then grab a copy of issue 2 and keep the sales going. And particularly the trade that you can put on your shelf. The orders for the trade, I think, probably will be a big factor into the new story. But if you're digging Killer Queens, the second arc, I think we're going to find out what in the world is the Space Pride Festival. We're going to see what that is.
Yes. So gang, you've heard it here first. And I've said this all the time when I bring on creators, if you like the book or you want more story, buy it, tell people about it, because publishers do that. If it sells, guess what? They want more. So support.
And you definitely want more of this. We're going to do like 4-issue snippets. So we can, there's 100, if you want to call them episodes. I got 100 different ideas. I do want to give a huge shout out to the creative team. It's Claudia Balboni on art, Harry Saxton on colors, and Lucas Catoni on letters. It comes from Dark Horse Comics. And I'm not sure when this is going to be posted, but issue 1 is already out and issue 2 is imminent or will be on shelves by the time you're listening to this.
Yeah. It'll be very shortly after you see this video, issue 2 will come out, and I'm excited for that. David, is there anything else that you are working on that you want to mention, or is it just focusing right now on, because I know you're busy with Kanto, I know you're busy with Killer Queens, right? But is there anything else you kind of got work that you're working on?
Sure. I got a couple of things I wanted to, I'd love to mention. One is I'm doing, I wrote a one-shot, issue of Firefly for Boom Studios, as you can see my fanboy above me. That's slated to come out on September 29th. So you will have a chance to pick that up. Great covers by Adam Gorham and Christian Ward. And if you're a Firefly fan, I got to tell the story about how Simon broke River out of the Academy. Leading up to the opening pilot issue or pilot episode of the Firefly series when she's in the cryo crate on Serenity. So I have that. And then we didn't talk about it, but Kanto is in development for a feature animated feature film with Will Smith's Westbrook Studios. And Drew Zucker and I are the co-creators, are executive producing, and I'm writing the screenplay. So that's still going, and hopefully
so that's kind of you're working on the screenplay for them, and then that's where they move forward with once you bring that to the table.
Yeah, kind of everything is moving forward at once, so fingers crossed we can get it over the finish line. But yeah, there's a couple of things that I personally am looking forward to coming down the pike.
That's so cool. Yeah, I saw that because that announcement with the company happened what, early 2021 here?
Yeah, I think it was March.
Yep.
March of 21 that Westbrook had optioned it. And so, you know, it's a process.
I'm sure it is. So
we are definitely moving along with that.
And I've got to ask you, since you mentioned the Firefly book, obviously you were a fan before this. So how cool was that to get to write a comic for a series, a fandom that you already loved?
I adore Firefly. It's my number one sci-fi franchise. I just love it. And for all the confluence of events that came together to give me that opportunity, it's a dream come true. That's honestly. So cool.
Well, David, thank you so much for just taking some time to talk about everything with me, with comics, with Kanto and Killer Queens. This has been so much fun.
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, I've been looking forward to this, and it's just great. So thank you for chatting up with me.
Absolutely. So gang, again, go, I'm sure you're already in Kanto, so go continue to buy Kanto, go support Kanto, but go buy Killer Queens right now. You're gonna laugh. I guarantee you it's fun. Go check it out. Dark Horse Comics. You're gonna love it. Please go support it. And with that being said, hopefully you can find some time this weekend to curl up, grab a book, and nerd out. Peace.